This is the 84th episode. Welcome to the Unschlagbar Ehrlich Podcast, Owen Roddy.
Pleasure to be here.
Nice to see you in Austria again.
Yeah, I know, this is like my second home now at this stage. Yeah. It's the third time I've been here this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so third time in Austria, yeah. We have Jay Harris, one of my new pros, making his debut in Austria. He's 1-0, fantastic fighter. Very excited to see how he gets on a cage fight series. So yeah, I'm excited.
Everyone is excited to see him, actually.
Yeah, yeah,
they should be. I heard some crazy stories.
Yeah, he's a talented kid, works very hard, very well-rounded, powerful. So I'm excited to see him showcase his skills on such a big show, especially on Fight Pass. So yeah, we're buzzing for it. Everyone at home in Ireland is watching. He's got a good few people coming over as well, which is great.
Really?
So yeah. So it's gonna be a good night.
Yeah, the Irish fans, they are crazy.
Yeah, they get behind our fighters, definitely.
Yeah. Hey, last time I was in Dublin, mm-hmm. I visited the SPG in Charleston.
Yeah.
Thank you for welcoming there.
Yeah, no, it was great to have you over. I believe you've done your interview with Andreas, talking about his return after his injury, and then obviously having a chat with young Jared about this fight. So, it was great to have you over.
It was a lot of fun, and I really loved the feeling of the SPG gym, because you had a great music taste, actually.
Oh, did I? Yeah, so people like the music, yeah. My Spotify playlist, yeah, so I must share them, yeah, people seem to like them.
Yeah. You're always listening to, like, old music stuff?
Yeah, well, I'm getting on in years, so it's not that old for me, but maybe it's old to you guys, but it's a music I grew up with, so, yeah, I enjoy it.
It's really nice, because normally in normal combat sports gym, you always hear rap. The classic rap, the new stuff, and then you hear like your songs, and it's like, wow, such a pleasure to see something.
Well,
else.
You know what? It kind of sets the mood. Sometimes music can influence you, and if it's, you know, heavy rap and aggressive rap, then especially inspiring, guys get very aggressive and they go for it. And it's not all the time. You don't want that all the time, so it's good to listen to some chilled out music, something that's fun, that lifts your spirits.
Yeah.
Because then everybody trains and spars that way. So yeah, it can be influential.
Do you play aggressive rap when they have sparrings?
Sometimes it depends. Sometimes I put on the Rocky soundtrack and everyone tries to kill each other. So
okay.
Yeah, only when I want to see some tough rounds, I'll put on some aggressive music. But for most of the time. It's fun music, yeah. Keeps people keep their spirit lifted and keep them smiling.
Do you have a Spotify playlist?
I do, but I don't even have it saved. I just whatever I usually listen to, I like, and I stick on my liked playlist. So,
they're always the same songs, I guess.
No, just same genres, like, you know what I mean. So we go to a lot of the 70s. I do listen to. Just be pretty cool, you know.
This is old music for us.
Yeah. It is a bit old for me. I'm not gonna lie. I'm an 80s kid, but 70s is good.
Great, yeah. What's your favorite three songs?
Favorite three songs? Oh Jesus, I don't know.
For our listeners, so they get a feeling what you are listening to.
I don't know. I like. I can't think. You put me on the spot now. Let me see.
You can think about it.
Yeah. I like. I can't really think. Anything from the 70s, completely honest. So if you're listening to stuff from the 70s, anything. I'm actually strung out now at the moment on the. What you call a soundtrack, the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, so that's a nice
the soundtrack
one.
On that is unbelievable. Yeah. So that's heavily influenced me at the moment. Yeah, so it's great fun.
Did you watch the movies first?
Love the movie. Yeah, so watch the movies first, then found the soundtracks, and they're just the top of the range. Really uplift the music, puts a smile on your face. So
Did you ever think about expanding your gym? Like in Austria, the gyms are very big.
Yep.
Even the small gyms are, I think, bigger than your gym.
Yeah.
It's like so small in Dublin, everything. Yeah. So your gym is like two floors.
Yep.
Did you ever think about expanding?
At the moment, no. I mean, I'm happy with what I have. And in Dublin, it would be, my gym would be, for MMA, it would be a relatively big gym.
Really?
Yeah, you know, it's 7,000 square foot. We've got two training areas. We've got a weights area. And then, you know, change rooms, all of that stuff. So it's relatively big. And at the moment, I don't look at myself expanding, especially the cost of units and stuff in Ireland at the moment is very high. Expensive. So yeah. I'm happy where I am at the moment.
When did you get the opportunity to own your own gym?
I was always coaching like part time, and then while I was coaching at SPG Ireland for John Kavanagh, I had what's called what I used to call Primal MMA. So it was a small gym. A couple of young fighters and stuff like that. And about 5 years ago now, I went out on my own and set up SPG Charlestown. I just found travelling across the city was hard on me. You know, I was travelling across to John's gym every day, coming home, teaching a couple of classes in my gym, and just ran out my feet. So yeah. I bit the bullet and told John I was going to set up my own big facility, and he was all for it. He wished me the best of luck, and 5 years later, here I am.
Crazy. Yeah. I know, Jerry told me like it was the first gym you had, like Prime.
Yeah, Primal, yeah, you Primal MMA. That's a good few years ago now.
Yeah. How far away was the John Kavanagh training?
It was across the city, so, you know, the times I was travelling, it was roughly about 40 minutes across and 40 minutes back, so it was hard. You sit, and then if you're sitting in traffic, you're probably there for an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, traffic in Dublin is crazy. They go like 30 km/h.
Yeah, so it was... Just spending a lot of time sitting in the car and then doing a good few hours in John's, and then coming back and trying to teach in mine in the evening. It was just hard on the body and hard on the mind. So, I just decided to go it alone, and I'm really enjoying it now at the moment. It's been 5 years, and the gym is building, the fight team is building, and I'm happy.
Was it always your dream to be a coach and to own your own gym?
Yeah, well, after fighting, I am. You know, I kind of felt like there was nothing else I could do. I always found I was a good coach. I've been coaching many, many years. I taught kids classes, you know, really early on in my MMA career. Mm-hmm. While I was a professional, I was still coaching kids classes and stuff like that. I enjoyed coaching. I found it made me a better athlete. And I always found that I would probably enter into that role.
Yeah.
You know.
How come that you are so okay with training normal people too? Because I know... Some guys, they only want to train professionals. I mean, it's hard to watch someone who just started or maybe is not so active.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, 80% of the gym is just regular people regular people interested in mixed martial arts or self-defense or just combat sports. And they just want to, instead of going to a gym and lifting weights, they want to, are running on a treadmill, they want to come and learn some kickboxing or jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. So 80% of the gym is that kind of demographic. And then we've got 20% that want to fight. And then out of that 20%, we've got 40% that want to be professionals and go to the UFC. So, you know, the fighters is a very small demographic. And then it's great to have, you know, I think of about 250 members now. And, you know, it's great to have... to go in and see them just, you know, trying to achieve their goals, whether it's to lose a bit of weight or, you know, just, you know, come in and meet people and meet like-minded people that are interested in the sport and lose weight and have fun and stuff like that. So I love the whole lot of it. I love the fact that we've got a good kids program, beginners program, we've got an MMA fit program, which is just like a cardio-based program, and then we've got our amateurs and our pros. So
it's
busy.
It's just... Yeah, it's a lot of mixed martial arts because most of the gyms, they have like a grappling focus or a boxing focus, but you are like well-rounded.
Yeah, we're trying to be, you know.
How would you describe training like Andreas Binder, Jay Harris and Johnny Walker?
Yeah, so working with them all, they all have the same, the high-level fighters, they all kind of have the same mentality. They're workhorses, they're perfectionists, so they're always looking at the fine details, they're always... You know, trying to critique themselves and trying to, you know, find their small little flaws. Am I doing this perfect? Am I doing that perfect? Do you think I should work on this? So they all have the same mentality, but they all have different personalities. So
different.
So Johnny's a bit of a wild guy, bit of fun, always dancing and doing crazy stuff. Jay would be similar to that, like trying to have a laugh and enjoy the training.
Yeah.
Andreas is similar, but Andreas is a little bit more like more focused, and he you know, he's there to do a job and stuff like that. But you know, it all comes down to their ability to continually turn up for every session, put the work in, and set these little goals and achieve those goals. So they all have their goals, you know. whether it's Jair looking to, you know, get four fights this year, like get three fights this year. Andreas is looking for that title shot, and Cage Fight Series. Johnny, you know, his big goal there was to recently come back and put on a good performance against Kutalaba, which he did. A phenomenal performance.
Yeah, crazy performance. Actually, because Kutalaba is such a good guy.
Yeah, he's really, really good. It was a really tough fight for him, and he came in and he done what not many people thought he could do, which is going to get the submission over him.
Totally.
You know, I was expecting Johnny to go in and keep it long and rangy and knock him out, but. The sign of a good camp is to get a win in any position that's available, and Johnny did that. You know, he was prepared on the feet, prepared on the wrestling, and prepared on the ground. The opportunity on the ground came, and he took it. And I think that's the goal for any fighter, to be able to see the opportunity and seize the opportunity. Johnny done it, and obviously now he's got a big fight back in Brazil against. Paul Craig.
Scottish guy,
very good grappler, very good tough guy. It's another tough fight, but you know, for Johnny, he wants to be UFC champion, so he's got to do that. And you know, for the likes of Jair, we've got the fight tomorrow night against a tough opponent, and then hopefully, you know, that goes well, we've got maybe two more fights by the end of the year, and then, you know, one or two next year, and hopefully we'll be knocking on the UFC's door. Andreas now, hopefully he'll recover. His hand is almost perfect now. Should be hitting in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then it's just about, you know, putting the training in till early next year, and then we get him back on this car, on one of these cards, and go again.
I'm glad to see them back.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. We love coming over to Austria. Yeah. Cage Fight Series is a phenomenal show, and one of the most professional shows I've been at. They put on very good competitive fights. It's on Fight Pass, so there's a lot of exposure. So I really can't complain. You know, it's unbelievable.
You have never been before in Austria.
Apart from
Cage Fight Series,
now. But I am actually coming to Austria for one of my friends' stags next year. I don't even know. Yeah. So I'll be coming over on a holiday next year. So I'll be four times in less than 12 months to Austria. So. Yeah, it's good. Falling in love with the place.
Yeah. Johnny told me that he wanted to do his stag also in Vienna.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. Crazy. When did you bump into Johnny? He was at...
I was in Dublin.
Brilliant. Oh, yeah.
At the beginning of the week,
Yeah. Johnny likes to travel. He's in Thailand at the moment doing a bit of Thai boxing. So, and then I think he's back in the next week or so and get back on the training as well.
And one of my friends, he was in Thailand too the last weeks, and he was writing me like, hey, I think I just saw Johnny Walker in Thailand, and he is in Thailand, but oh my gosh, I miss Johnny Walker.
He's a good lad, he's a good character, Johnny. Yeah. Very, very fun guy.
So, Andreas Binder is a manager at Aldi.
Yep.
Full time. How was your start with coaching and everything? Did you earn enough money with coaching?
When I started, I was working as well. I was working... like in a pharmaceutical kind of company. It was a good job, and there was a lot of potential to be to take like an apprenticeship to be like a calibrator for calibrating metals and stuff. It was a good job, and I just didn't enjoy it. You know, I was doing mixed martial arts as a hobby, but I felt like I was getting really good, and I decided just to throw all the eggs into one basket and quit the job and take on mixed martial arts full time. So I wasn't earning any money. I was teaching the odd class here and there for John, the kids' classes, making a couple of euro, and just struggling until I set up my own gym. And then when I set up my own gym, it gave me a wage and stuff like that.
And so since 5 years you're actually full-time coaching?
5 years, 5 years full-time coaching, and really enjoying it. The gym is doing very well. I'm making a wage, so I'm happy. I love what I do, so I can't complain.
Did Conor not pay enough?
Conor pays enough, let's just say that, yeah. The Conor fight camps always help, I'll just say that, definitely,
So I know that you... stopped being a professional MMA fighter exactly 10 years ago, like in December, when you were like 29.
Yeah.
I, I heard your friends talking that you had like something in your brain.
And
stuff
I had a few injuries and stuff like that, and I just had to stop. You know, you fight for so long, your body it'll give
you
up at some
damaged.
Point. So I had a number of injuries and. Yeah, I just called it a day, you know. I have kids and stuff like that. Fighting is a, it's a very small part of your career. Although it's everything at that time. It is, it only lasts for maybe 10, 15 years if you're lucky. That's a really, really small amount of time in your life. And, you know, the injuries were gathering up on me. And I have kids and a beautiful wife and stuff like that, and I'm like, I thought to myself, you know, for a bit of fun now, you know, what kind of state is my body going to be in when I'm 39 now and I feel fantastic, or when I'm 49, you know? So I decided to retire, and I'm happy I did, you know. I'm very happy.
Really?
I did, yeah, of course, you know. Looking back at the time, you know, and even now I'd love to fight and stuff like that, but you know, fighting is not the be all and end all. When you're at that age and you're in the mix, it is. But you know, it is important to look beyond fighting. You know, because time flies. You know, it only feels like yesterday that you know, 10 years. You said that it's crazy. 10 years has passed, and that only feels like yesterday to me. So,
yeah.
But I'm happy. I'm coaching. I get the same buzz out of it. I'm happy for all my students that are achieving their goals, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, I was writing an article like 2 days ago about depression in sports, and then I was reading yesterday that Uriah Hall had depression, and he stopped his career.
Yeah.
Did you never struggle with?
I did, definitely. After I retired, I was on two minds. I was battling. I was like, the fighter in me didn't want to retire, and the logical thinker in me, you know, said I probably should retire, and you're battling for, I battled for a good few months, maybe 6 months of, you know, up and down, and will I, won't I, and what are the risks, and you know, I made a decision that I was going to retire, and then I was, obviously, when I said I was going to do it, I was very upset, and I gave myself like 2 weeks that you can cry and moan and be upset, but after these 2 weeks on, you're all in on coaching. And then once I done that, you know, I was working with Connor at the time, and working with a lot of the fighters in SPG Ireland, Connor and Artem and Ash the Bash and Paddy and all of these guys. They were all coming up, and I was doing a lot of the striking there. So I decided it's done now. I'm going to be a coach, and that's that. And then I was full steam ahead, 100% on coaching, and I left the fighting behind me.
So it's actually helpful that you did not have the full cut, like not going to the gym every day and not seeing the guys.
Yeah, well, I was still in the gym every day, like I am now.
I know you can't like spar with everyone.
Yeah. Well, now I can't. Jesus, now, and it's not. You know, when you get a bit older, like you know, young kid with pace and speed and stuff like that, it's hard to. But like, it is important to pass the torch, isn't it? That's what we try and do. We learn as much as we can. We tell our students all the mistakes that you're going to make, and tell them the mistakes that we've made. Hopefully they don't make them, and then that cuts the learning curve in half, and they get better half as quick as it took us, you know, and then they pass it on again. And that's why we've young kids coming up now, 18, 19, that are phenomenal, because we've spent, you know, for me, I've spent, 20 years making mistakes in mixed martial arts, and then I talk to Jer or Andreas, and I say, you shouldn't do it that way, because these are the repercussions of doing it that way, and then his learning curve is cut in half, and then in 10 years time he's going to pass it on to some of our younger students, and the learning curve will be cut in half again, and we just keep evolving, you know.
Yeah, you're one of the pioneers actually in Ireland, so how much did the game change? Do you see like, okay, this is completely different when I started, or this is different? What are the takeaways?
Well, when I started regarding jiu-jitsu, there was no black belts.
Yeah.
You know, my coach John was the highest belt. When I started with John, he was a blue belt. And that was the highest belt in the country.
Wow.
And then a couple of months after that, he got his purple belt. and it was a pub I've had for a couple of years. So that's where we were in Ireland. Nobody knew anything. Everyone was one-dimensional, so you were either a striker, and you weren't a wrestler because there wasn't that much wrestling really in Ireland. There was probably one kind of Olympic wrestling, freestyle wrestling gym, which was in Hercules gym.
Yeah.
And you know, John and a few of the guys were the pioneers for jiu-jitsu. We were learning off videos and DVDs and stuff like that. So it was crazy. And now you look at all the fighters now, and you've got brown belts and black belts at 21 that have been training since they're 4 or 5, you know. And they're high-level strikers, they're high-level wrestlers, they're high-level jiu-jitsu guys, and the skill set is just so much higher, you know. They're just phenomenal. But that's, if that's not the case, then we're doing something wrong. And and the skill, the level of mixed martial artists in Ireland is really, really high. Like, they're really, really high. We all, for such a small country, for the amateurs, we always do really well in the IMAFs. We always, you know, we're always very high up in the medals. And as pros, you know, for a very small country, we're fighting on the biggest shows in the world. So, the Irish like to fight, let's just say that.
You have such great fighters, you have such great fans, but is the Irish, like, is Ireland really supporting mixed martial arts?
Yeah. I think Ireland, we're such a small country, you know. Everyone kind of knows everyone, you know. You're never more than 2 or 3 people away from somebody you know, or somebody that you know knows them. So when you get the likes of Andreas or Jir or any of my amateurs competing, and they're doing okay, everyone rallies behind them. And, you know, if you're doing well abroad, everyone is supporting you and, you know, showing you love on Instagram and social media and stuff like that. So, yeah, we rally behind our athletes, and that's across the board, you know. So, yeah, it's great. It's great to have Irish fans supporting us.
Do we get a lot of support from a quality media also? Because in Austria...
No, not the mainstream really. Media. You know, mixed martial arts is still not recognised as a sport yet.
Yeah, now, it's the same here.
Yeah, IMA at the moment are working really, really hard to get the sport recognised. I believe, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully Sport Ireland will recognise the sport in the next year or so. And you know, then, you know, help us build the sport. You know, we've got a lot of volunteers in IMA, you know, working very, very hard, you know, to try and, you know, get the sport recognised. The coaches, the refs, all the staff in IMA, you know, are trying their best to make the sport as safe as possible. And Ireland has we've the gold standard in safety in amateur mixed martial arts. You can't compete without a brain scan. You need regular bloods done. It's really, really, really high standard. Nowhere else in the world has the standards that Ireland has.
Wow.
And no combat sport in Ireland has the same safety standards that mixed martial arts or amateur mixed martial arts and professional mixed martial arts. So we're working very hard in Ireland to get the sport recognised. And I think once that happens, then the mainstream media will get behind us, and then our athletes that are working day in and day out to become an amateur world champion or to become an international world champion. Like Jerry's going to be, hopefully, Jerry's going to be walking to get this Cage Fight Series world title, and Andreas is going to be walking to get the Cage Fight Series world title. And we've got young amateurs, like Jerry's a former world champion, and if this was a different sport, you know, there would be parades in Ireland and stuff like that. But at the moment, we're not recognised. Yeah. But that doesn't deter us. We will get recognised, and you know, and then we'll get the support, not the mainstream media support that we deserve. You know,
was striking was boxing the first combat sport you got in?
Yeah, no, for me, no. I started mixed martial arts straight away under. So
because your main focus is actually striking.
Yeah, I fell in love with striking. I became pretty good at it. I'd done a lot of Thai boxing over the years, and
that's the best spot. But I love Thai boxing.
Yeah, but I just I never came from any specific art.
Background.
I joined. So when mixed martial arts was starting, there was a couple of kind of the OGs we would call now. That would be John Kavanagh, Andy Ryan, Dave Jones, Dave Roach, these were kind of the first guys that were competing. And
did you see them live or did you see them?
No, they were only training, and then I stumbled across, I was trying to find out where I could do it. I stumbled across Andy Ryan in my school. He was teaching jiu-jitsu, and I went into him and he says, come down to the gym in Colester, and they were all training.
Yeah.
And then I started training there, and that gym closed a couple of weeks later, and then John had another gym in Phibsborough, and I went into Phibsborough, and he stayed in that gym for a good few years and just built it from there. But it was just mixed martial arts, you know. We had John that knew jiu-jitsu, we had Andy that was a judo black belt, we had Dave Roach that was a very good fighter and street fighter back in the day, and you know, we just meshed it all together. And I was a young kid, I was a good few years younger than them, so I was just sitting there picking their brain and trying to learn from them. You know?
How young were you when you say like?
I was 18. Yeah.
18, yes.
18, I was, you know, but that was, at that stage, it was young because nobody else, there was nobody doing it. This was kind of one of the first gyms that popped up. And then there was a gym up north and a gym maybe down the country. But yeah, it's good times.
Do you remember your last fight, your last non-official fight?
Last non-official, a street fight?
Yeah, street fight.
Yeah, I do remember. I've had a few, but
was like some years ago?
A good few years ago, yeah. Many, many years ago, yeah.
How did it happen?
It was in a pub and somebody pushed me and I pushed them and threw a dig, and I waited to outside and I said, I'll see you outside. And I gave him a few digs. I think I guillotine choked him and put him asleep and then just got up and left him, yeah. He came around a couple of seconds later, but yeah. I try not to get involved in fights, like, you know, I would talk it down until somebody hits me, and that's what happened. I was in the pub, the guy hit me, and I was like, okay, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
That's it. But haven't had a fight in many years, thank God.
But you were at the grappling tournament like 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I decided just to jump in and do a no-gi kind of submission-only comp. It was Team Ireland versus Team Poland. I fought some black belt, a tough guy, and yeah, I managed to go in and get the takedown and catch a rear naked choke on him. It was good. It was great. It was the first time I had my kids, my two girls, there to see me compete.
Yeah.
You know, my youngest was obviously at home; she was only a baby. But I had my two girls, Layla and Sophia, and they were there. That was the first time they managed to see me. They were a lot younger when I was fighting professionally in mixed martial arts. So it's great to bring them out onto the mats and show their dad show them what their dad used to do and what he does. So yeah, it was a proud moment for me. I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. It sounds like I had to think about Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
His last gi grappling tournament.
Yeah, it's crazy. And now Tom works with some friends of mine from Liverpool.
Okay.
He does boxing and stuff like that, and then also he's doing jiu-jitsu and stuff. It's great to see. Tom puts jiu-jitsu, you know, on the radar. Like, people, you know, they see Tom Hardy and they see he does jiu-jitsu, and it builds the sport and mixed martial arts. You know, he made Warrior, which was a great movie. And
I loved it. Really.
Yeah, you know what? He's a good guy, and he has this charity now called Reorg that's for ex-military guys with injuries and stuff. I don't know all the details, but yeah, he loves mixed martial arts and he loves jiu-jitsu, and he's competing, and he's doing what we all should do, which is go out and put it all on the line. You know, there's a lot of attention on him. He's still not scared. He's still brave enough to go out and compete on a local show. Like, that shows a lot of character. Yeah, you have to give people credit like that. There's not many people that would do that. So all the credit to him. And you know, if he's ever in Ireland, he can come over and do some jiu-jitsu or do some training with myself. The doors would always be open for him.
If he comes, you tell me, because I want to come. And
he wouldn't be the only woman that would be looking to come outside the gym. My own wife would probably be there as well. I'd be pushing them all away. But so that's it. Yeah.
It's really great. Hey, what did fighting teach you?
It taught me resilience. Determination.
You talked about resilience with in some other interview.
Okay.
Because you want to teach resilience to your children.
Of course, yeah. I did trying to get them used to losing and learning from the losses and not being afraid to go. like nobody wants to lose, but you have to accept losing will be part of the process. And a lot of the time you learn most of your lessons from a loss, you know. I want my kids to learn that at a very young age, you know. It's very, very hard to overcome that fear, but, you know, mixed martial arts, you lose a lot every day, you know what I mean? And especially as you're coming up through the ranks and you're being beat up, and, you know, I remember plenty of time going into the gym and, you know, preparing for a fight, and what I learned from doing mixed martial arts, and definitely resilience and learning from your losses and stuff. And I think the more people that can learn to deal with that at a young age, the better they're going to be, you know, because that transcends martial arts or sport. You bring that mentality into your life, into your business life, into your work life, into your family life, and you know, learn to take risks and calculate risks if you can, and go after what you love, you know what I mean? So yeah, I learned mixed martial arts changed my life, without a doubt. You know, I wouldn't be the person I am today if I didn't find mixed martial arts and go for it, you know.
Did becoming a father change you too?
A father? Yeah. Yes, yeah, 100%.
Even in coaching?
Yeah, like, you know what? So, yeah, like, when you become a father, everything changes, you know. When you're on your own, you're on your own, and you can take whatever risk you want, and you can be fearless, and you've nothing to worry about. And, you know, when you've no kids, you feel like you can run through a wall, and, you know, you can do anything, you know, you can risk your life non-stop. But when you have kids, your life is not your own, you know.
Yeah.
It's theirs now, and you're there to do a job, and you're there to look after them and you know, teach them and give them the best possible start. So you know, it's scary, you know, it is scary. You don't know if you're doing it right. You can only do your best, and, you know, same again, like, I'm trying to learn from my mistakes and learn from what my parents taught me and try to improve on them and pass them on to my kids, and hopefully they'll do the same. But who knows? It's a guessing game, you know. You just give your kids love and support and back them 100% and hope they make the right decisions too.
Yeah. How did you meet your wife?
Well, funny story. It was on a blind date. Yeah. On Halloween. So yeah. I think it's probably about 15, 16 years ago or something now.
Wow.
At this stage. So. Yeah, my friend David set us up, and went down a blind date. Had the best night ever. We just had so much fun. I knew straight away. I always said it to my friends as well. I was like, I really like this girl, and, you know, we'll see where it takes us. And, you know, three kids, and married, three kids, a house, and everything down there. 15 years later, we're living good. Can't complain.
What were you dressed at Halloween?
I didn't even dress up, to be honest. We didn't dress up. Although, if I look back on the pictures, it looks like I dressed up, because I don't know what I was wearing back then. It's gas. You look back at how fashion changes, and I had a mad shirt on, a leather jacket and all. So it looks like I'm dressing up as the Fonz, but it's not intentional. But you know what? It's been amazing, you know. Same again. I wouldn't be where I am today without the support of my wife Kelly. You know, I'm off over here now. Next 4 days, she's at home, bringing the kids to school. You know, looking after everything in the gym. You know, bringing the kids to all their activities and stuff like that. And I'm over here, you know, and she understands that, and she knows I'm doing it for the right reasons, and she supports me, and I support her. So I'm lucky. I'm fortunate.
Are all of your three girls training a little bit of mixed
a little bit? They've Layla and Sophia have done it for a good while. They're okay, but they don't do it anymore. They do GAA, which is kind of Irish football, Irish sports. So they do my little one, Sophia, does camogie and football, or Gaelic football.
Yeah.
And Layla does Gaelic football, and they love it, and I love it. It's great for them. It's a tough sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's physical, and you know what? They only signed up about a year or so ago, and it's It's been the best thing ever for them. I can't recommend joining GAA. If you don't do mixed martial arts, do GAA, because it just gives so much. It gives so much to the kids, and our team of tools is on behind them 100% as well. They do sports. I would never push them into something that they don't want to do, and they don't really want to do it. But they know how to throw punches. They know how to do submissions. So they know enough to defend themselves, and I'll still keep them ticking over. Like, I get the girls on the pads and stuff like that. My youngest is 5, and now I've recently only started getting her doing pad walk and stuff like that. Right. They'll know enough, but if any of them says, "Look, Dad, I actually want to go back to mixed martial arts and compete," I'll be behind them 100%. If they want to do dancing, they'll do dancing. If you want to do GAA, whatever they want to do, I'll follow them and support them.
And this football, this Gaelic football.
Yeah.
The place is better there because the grass is smelling better than the gym.
Yeah, much there. The gym stinks.
I know. But somehow it feels like home. I don't know.
I get
in gyms and I feel like home every time.
We spend so much time in the gym and that just be like it's the same. Sometimes I'll get a smell of a stinking pair of gloves or shin pads, and it'll bring me right back to the old gym.
Yeah.
In John's old gym, like, you know, grimy old school gym. So yeah, you know, smells, they bring back memories, you know.
Always.
Good or bad.
Smell and music.
Music as well, yeah. Exactly, yeah. But I'm happy with where I'm at the moment, happy with everything. I cannot complain. I'm very fortunate and very, very lucky, so just keep pushing forward.
Yeah. I was a bit jealous when I looked through your Instagram because I saw a picture of you and Demi Lovato. And I was like, how did you meet Demi Lovato? I mean, UFC, she's a big fan, I know.
Yeah, that's right. She sang, that was at the Mayweather fight, I believe. And she sang the American National Anthem for...
I forgot that, really.
Yeah, for the Mayweather fight. And we had... Oh, Jesus, I can't remember the girl's name now. That's disgraceful because I'm a big fan of her, but I'm at the draw on the blank. But she sang our national anthem beautifully as well. So it was a crazy time as well, you know.
Yeah.
I've a couple of lifetimes of memories that I can look back on. So can't ask for more than that.
Do you also watch like UFC at home when there's an event?
Yeah, I do. Not as much as I used to. I'll have to admit. But any of the big ones, I'll definitely watch. I won't stay up. I'll usually get up the next day and watch them.
Same.
And then I'll watch. I'll watch a good bit. Like, I'll watch the highlights and I'll watch the finishes and stuff like that. And then if there's big cards coming up or if there's people that I'm interested in weight classes and stuff like that, I'll watch them. Yeah.
So you don't get fed up with all the fights and.
No. Some fights that intrigue me. Mm. I'll watch and then. But I won't watch it as fanatically as I used to.
Yeah.
You know.
How annoying is it if you always get questions about Conor McGregor? I guess like everyone has questions.
No, it's not annoying. You know, he's one of the biggest celebrities in the world now.
Yeah.
He's definitely the biggest name in combat sports. And my association to Conor has opened up so many opportunities for me. I've been on the craziest journey. As a coach with him as well, so people will always ask how he's doing and stuff like that.
How is he doing?
He's always he's doing fantastic. He's over filming a movie at the moment, and he released recently that he's adamant that he's going to come back next year. So
I know.
We'll wait for the bat signal to come up in the sky, and then he'll round up the troops, and we'll go again. So it's gonna be exciting. But you know, I think it's good for Conor to take a bit of time off as well. Yeah. You know, let that leg fully recover and enjoy his young family as well. Like he's got a young family, and it's important that you enjoy them while you're young. Like I'm looking at my eldest now; she's 12.
Yeah.
Same again. That just feels like yesterday. He's got a younger family than me. So it's important. I believe that he enjoys that, and he seems to be doing that. He seems to be spending a lot of time with his young family and enjoying every minute. And so he should. You know, he's worked hard enough for that now at this stage.
Yeah, he earned it.
Yeah.
How often is he coming to SPG, or does he have time
to come?
Obviously,
it's been a year or so since he's been doing major work. He's just he's keeping the cardio up, focusing on the recovery, and then focusing on all the other aspects of his business empire now, I suppose you would call it. But you know, Conor doesn't cut corners, and if he decides he's going to fight, I'm sure we'll all get the call, and then everything else will get put aside, and he will focus on the task at hand. No better man to do it. So yeah, he's doing great. Yeah, I'd imagine.
What surprised you the most when you were coaching him?
Same, they don't. Well, for Conor, same kind of characteristics as everybody. The ability to look at the smallest detail and really, you know, critique himself. But his one over everyone was the self belief. He had self belief from day one. The belief that he was going to be the champion from the day he walked into the gym. That people say they believe in themselves and they back themselves 100%, but you can look in their eye and you can see there's doubt, especially in trying moments. Never once seen it with him, and I've never once seen it from day one. So, his belief.
How much did it change, how much did the SPG change when he won the belt first time?
The change when he started doing this, I've said this so many times before, when he won his first belt on Cage Warriors, I think the whole team, and I was still fighting at the time, believed that we could all do this. And when he made his UFC debut and won in such fashion, we all started believing in ourselves as well. And then, that has a cumulative effect. You know, his belief started to rub off on us, and then everyone started to believe. And then when people talk about that team back in the day, and we all believed that, we could take over the world. And, we've had so many major nights. The team has done phenomenal. And I think that rubbed off on us,
Yeah. How many bottles of Proper 12 do you have at home?
I have lots of empty bottles of Proper 12. Okay. I'll say that, I have one or two full ones as well. But they won't last long. He's got his forged. I got a little bar, a couple of taps in the house. So I get his forged out and his forged lag and his Proper 12. So he's keeping me drunk these days as well. But you have to give the man credit. He's anything he puts his mind to, he puts the work in, and he makes it a success, which is great.
Yeah, and sometimes you need a good drink for these crazy times.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to let loose, in moderation.
In moderation. Thank you so much, Owen.
No problem. Happy to chat, and I'm excited about Cage Fight Series and Jerry Harris putting on a stellar performance tomorrow night.
We will see us there again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast episode 84 with Owen Roddy. I wish you a great start into this new week. Stay safe and unschlagbar ehrlich.